Andrew Coates, how are you doing, man?
Hey, Herman, I am great. Thank you for having me on. I haven't done as many of these lately, so it's good to pick and choose a few selectively, and look forward to chatting with your audience.
Absolutely. I appreciate your time. I know your time is limited, so I want to make sure we get as much as we can out of you today. So, you know, one of the biggest things and why I really wanted to have you on is, as I kind of follow a ton of people in the fitness space, you know, and I admire the work you do. And, you know, what you see over time is a lot of people start kind of venturing almost away from just helping regular people. And they start getting very, very detailed, whether it's in with strength training or nutrition or whatever it is. And I get it. You know, we all kind of love to geek out about it. I think that what I always respect is that you keep it extremely simple. And you really try to focus on, hey, you know, it's never too late for anybody. It's not as hard or complicated as many make it out to be. So, you know, I'd love to kind of just get your take on why you've stuck in that direction, but also why do you feel, you know, strength training and fitness is just such a critically important part of someone, just an average person's life?
Let's take the second question and come back to it. Like, save that. This, I hope, will be really useful for the person listening, because if you get overwhelmed by people and follow too many people in the fitness space, you could observe what you described. So on our side of things, some coaches want to move beyond working with the client one-on-one on the gym floor. I still coach full-time. I still enjoy it. I still love it. Whereas, you know, the quote business mentors who want to not train anybody anymore because they pretty much just want to make quote more money and do less work, doesn't work out that way very well. They'll often try to rush into the, hey, I'm a business coach for trainer side. So if the person listening sees someone who's really done that and is no longer coaching, and there are a handful of people who are good friends of mine I respect, like a Jonathan Goodman, but Jonathan's media, his social media, still very geared towards the general population, the end user. So that's fine. But I would take some of the other ones with a grain of salt, because I don't think their heart was really in helping people. I think that they have a different agenda. If you identify that, you can move on from that sort of person immediately. Two, there are people that started out within the industry, especially this has been something I've noticed recently. It's a bit of a grift where people will build a brand, build their media up on their physique, often ripped abs or being really jacked, lean. And then they move away from that space. Now, it's actually okay to realize that it's unsustainable. You get people like my pal Goob, who calls out people who Photoshop their stuff. You have champion Olympia people who are still editing their stuff. Like, you are literally the best in your category in the world and you need to narrow your waist. What's the everyday person supposed to think? Like, that's a completely unsustainable ideal where you peak for a show, let alone then you're further altering the images. So for the person listening, be very wary of these like images of perfection, because a lot of time that stuff's not real. Now, it's okay for coaches to talk about that and go, listen, like, you can't look like what people do on stage year round. But I think it's a bit disingenuous to turn around and have built a lot of a following off of, hey, here's my, you know, here's my abs, I'm ripped, I'm lean. And then turn around later on and poo-poo on that and criticize other coaches who are doing it. That's a friend of mine recently made this analogy. It's like pulling up the rope after you've climbed it, right? So again, I think what often happens there is you get people, and there are people in our space, and they pander and they grift to what they think are the most ideologically, socially palatable narratives, as opposed to what's actually speaking to real people. For example, there's a popular post or sentiment that we see sometimes, and it basically goes, choose your hard, right? So it's, and I actually put something up today, was a softer version of it. Because again, I'm not interested in pushing buttons or pissing people off. And I'm not interested in fighting with my industry, but I want messages that actually help people, right? That's what I care about. I don't care about like looking good, you know, and getting the cheers of the approval of my industry. I actually want stuff that actually makes someone go, I don't feel good. I don't feel good. I don't have great energy. I don't feel good about what I see in the mirror. I'm worried about you know, am I going to be able to do these things for my kids 10, 15 years down the road? It starts to answer the second question. And you've got people out there who are engaged in these ideological lies saying, no, you're healthy. This is okay. You're supposed to be happy with this. Right. And actually, like, lecturing and criticizing people for wanting to be leaner, to want to lose body fat, to want any of these other like aesthetic based things, because while there's not a one-to-one relationship, like, you get lean to a point, it doesn't feel very good. Like, that's true. But this ideological lie that there's no relationship between your level of adiposity and your metabolic health or your long-term health outcomes, right? That you can work out, even if you are still categorically, for the people who freak out about BMI, still overweight or obese, right? But if you start working out and you're doing strength training, you're doing some sort of cardiovascular stuff, whether it's walking or maybe mixing in some more intense stuff, that's going to improve your metabolic health, even in the absence of fat loss at the moment. Okay, that's true. 100%. It's the best thing you can do for yourself. You're getting on that road. Chances are you're probably going to be motivated to change nutrition, change other lifestyle aspects, and chances are you'll probably start to lose body fat, which, despite what some people will tell you, is, and this is coming from a cardiologist I train, the losing the excess body fat is still one of the healthiest things you can possibly do outside of quitting smoking, right? And most people intuitively know that and they want help with that. And I'm just not interested in telling people, no, it's okay. This is good. You're supposed to be happy this way. And I think it might be a comforting lie for some people, but I think it's bullshit. And I think it's actually mean-spirited. I think it's disempowering. And what I hope people will come and see through my media is, here are some positive nudges. Here are some accessible. And again, like, motivation is very fleeting, but I don't mind. Okay, let's be a little motivational today, but also let's give something that people can use. My social media, primarily Instagram, is a bit more surface level accessible. If you go deeper, I've got two podcasts. One of those podcasts, I'm probably going to pivot it, but for the most part, it's been geared towards like just conversations with other coaches. I have fun with that. I enjoy it. I don't business coach or anything like that, but it's been great to connect with my friends. Cool. If enthusiasts want to listen, you'll still get a lot out of it. But I've got a second podcast called Forever Strength. I do with my partner in a women's online group strength program called Forever Strength. Her name is Bailey Lau. We actually do here's like how creatine works. Here's glute training. Here's a conversation with one of the members and her real experience with this stuff, which actually speaks to the end user. So if someone wants to go deeper on media, or you can get into the written articles that I've written for like T-Nation, a lot of strength-based stuff there. Very accessible for everyday people, but, you know, like, advanced people can use it too. Or some of the nutritional or lifestyle stuff I've written for muscle and fitness, for example. Those are the deeper dives that get a little bit more tactical. But if people reach out and ask questions, then I'm going to answer more detailed tactical questions, if that makes sense. So let's come around to the second thing. We'll look around us. The world is, you know, I got to gather these statistics for a presentation, but we've got some pretty crazy numbers on the number of people with diabetes in, I'll use the U.S. as a proxy. You know, the U.S. is not necessarily a representative sample of the world. Pre-diabetes rates are terrifying. High cholesterol, high blood cholesterol, high blood pressure. The number of heart attacks in the U.S. every year is astonishing. If you get into Peter Attia's book, Outlive, it kind of gets into some of the stuff with, you know, the rates and risks of Alzheimer's, neurological degenerative diseases. Some cancers have a relationship with lifestyle. Being obese, being overweight, having a very high level of adiposity is definitely a very strongly linked factor with a lot of heart disease stuff, some cancers, and then it has a very strong relationship with metabolic dysfunctions like prediabetes, which has a big relationship, diabetes, which has a lot of bad outcomes, and neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's. There's a strong relationship there. There are some people that think that, like, Alzheimer's is type 3 diabetes. That has been said in places. I don't know how well that has been verified by like the rigorous research on it, but there seems to be a really strong relationship. So here's the thing. Okay. I think most people know this. Where's the bottleneck? is it information? There's so much information out there, I think it gets overwhelming. So I think one of the practical things is to maybe pick one or a small handful of people whose media resonates with you. You like their attitude, you like their persona, your similar interests, and maybe deeper dive on those people versus getting caught in this state of nothing but consumption. Because if you consume media, especially superficial, scrolling through TikTok reels, ooh, I'm learning about this stuff, that is a emotionally soothing way to procrastinate from actually taking the harder action, which is to step foot into the gym or go for the walk or to, you know, to prepare your meals in advance and do a little bit more home cooking, right? And we can always lean on, well, I don't have time. That's rubbish. Outside of very, very select people, you know, let's say you got a couple who both work full time and they just had fucking twins or a kid or something. Guess what? Their sleep's going to be screwed up. They're not going to have as much time. Okay. Those people are forgiven. But for everybody else, I promise you, you're putting time into the things that matter to you. And you can get mothers and caregivers saying, well, I don't have time because I have to spend all my time and effort on my kids. Okay. Maybe. I think that's also a bit of a narrative that I want to challenge. And I don't want to be insensitive. I want people to think, is that really just a culturally inborn attitude and pressure that you've built up in, from yourself, and maybe some of it's external and societal, where you would feel guilty doing anything for yourself, for your health, taking the time out to go to the gym, cook healthy meals for you? Everything now becomes, your identity is about doing things for your kid, and anything that you do for yourself is bad. One of the healthiest, this is a little bit of a push, one of the healthiest things you could possibly do to raise your kids is two-part. One is to set an example of your health being a priority so that way your kids grow up seeing this stuff, seeing that strength training is normalized, seeing that this healthy nutrition is very normalized. I was very lucky that my parents encouraged me and my brothers to play sports. We had a lot of home-cooked meals, like way ahead of the curve on this stuff, right? And I think my life is heavily influenced by that. And if you didn't have that from your parents, you can change this narrative and pass a better role model example set of skills on to kids. And then two, if you're not caring for your metabolic health and staying strong, there's going to come a point where you don't have as much energy. You're not going to be able to be as productive or as focused or be as present for your kids now, but also later. And here's a risk. If you do this long enough where you, I think we see this in caregivers who are caring for ailing parents, right? If you pour everything into caring for them and you don't do anything for yourself, you risk resenting the person you're caring for. And that's not a good place to be emotionally, is to actually bear that kind of resentment. So I think carving out and setting a boundary around the time for you is actually a really essential behavior and attitude to embrace. And I actually do not believe it'll take anything away from the care of the kids, the ailing parent, et cetera, what have you, right? There's a lot of stuff there, I know, but these are at least some of the prevailing attitudes that I think we need to adopt. Challenge, especially if your default setting is one of these things that's keeping you from choosing action to improve the way you eat, improve your activity level, et cetera.
Yeah, I think I call this piece for a lot of people having compassionate accountability, you know, because I think there's two things that can be true. One, we have over the last 30, 40 years, you know, we've created a food system that is much more accessible, much more convenient, tastes very tasty in a lot of circumstances, right? And it's easier to eat more calories. Like that's the reality. And then two, you know, we've also, we have a larger workforce. You know, we have more families where dual partners are working and life is busier. We are moving less in general. We are finding ways to move less, right? And to be less active across the board. So I think there's ways to look at it and say, hey, you know what? Some of this might not even be necessarily all my fault, right? That I've gotten to this point. But I think to your point, at the end of the day, it's still my responsibility, right? Nobody's going to come help you and no one's going to come force you to do any of it. And so I think going back to the original point that you made, you know, I think finding a way that makes this actually accessible and doable in your life becomes critical, because we have gotten to a point where it's just so unbelievably overcomplicated online. And we all try to point, you know, we'll say it's seed oils, we'll say it's sugar, we'll say whatever, all the million things, right? Because we don't, we want to give people this false hope that it is just this simple scapegoat. And it doesn't come down to just putting in the work, like you said, right? And I think what's in a very important piece is there's the science part of this, but then there's also just the lifestyle and behavior. There's a, I think there's a great post that you had a few weeks ago that just talked about, it was very simple. It was like build muscle, right? You'll burn more calories, strength train, you'll burn more calories, yeah. Having more muscle, like all those, right? And you got someone called the Dr. Ids police on you, and they had them come in on the comment section. And I think the point was, people get very up in arms about anyone saying that building muscle burns calories, right? Because they're like, oh, well, it's not that much, and strength training is not that much.
Let's tease out the new. I think everybody should follow Dr. Ids. He's a pal, right? So, you know, he's tagged in there. You know, some anonymous account that follows me. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Or like, are you agreeing or are you fucking policing this shit? And the funny thing was, is he actually agreed. He said all the points I said were true. And some of the nuances in the, you know, he sort of points out that the statement that, okay, if you build more muscle, you burn more calories, is overstated. I'm like, yes, I said that in the caption very clearly. Personal trainers who make that claim, it's grossly overstated. But the combined effect, so there's two elements of this that gets lost when people are very pedantic about kind of research and evidence, because I consider myself to be very evidence-based. I think a lot of the evidence-based crowd are not very good communicators. Dr. Ids actually is. He's actually really good. So if you take the basic person who's inactive, right? And like you said, we live in, we can call it an obesogenic environment. We have evolutionary wiring to do two things: to seek and consume the highest calorie foods available, because our ancestors grew up in an environment of scarcity for the most part, right? And to conserve energy expenditure. Because of that scarcity, in order to survive, you had to be efficient with your energy intake when you're hunting, gathering, protecting, etc. Our modern environment, outside of, you know, some parts of the world, no longer exists that way. We have an overabundance of, yes, there's a lot of inflation, but relatively inexpensive, very, very high calorie foods. And those foods exist in combinations that were never found in nature. So we will call those super normal stimuli. Important concept. And in some cases, when we have super normal stimuli, media is a very good example, social media, where our dopamine reward system is motivated to seek higher calories. So what do we get? We have, and again, it's not that food companies are malevolent and evil. It's just that they're profit seeking. And again, I also understand that that gets to be a very complicated thing. But what are they doing? They're engineering combinations of fat, sugar, salt, and a few other things that are tasty, and that they hijack this dopamine reward system, where if you don't have good boundaries in place around it, the key here is you actually do have to make choices to not go to the default settings. You alluded to the fact that life is more convenient. It's easier. We don't have to expend as much energy for the basics of survival anymore. So we have what? Broken adaptive relics of our survival mechanisms in our desire to conserve energy and our desire to consume high energy in an environment where we no longer have to expend a lot of energy, and we have far more available high energy sources that were never found in nature before. So what happens to a lot of people? That particular equation can actually explain the rates of obesity in our world. It is. What's the answer? Are our current government systems ever going to legislate away the way that food stuff is? God, no. Like, there's a lot of money in lobbying going into government, especially in the US. Not realistic, not going to happen. So are we going to suddenly legislate and make people have to go and hunt and gather for the food and be active all over the place? Also, no. So the choice is you find and build in active lifestyle. You set some reasonable boundaries around what you're consuming. It's not like, oh, you have to give up all the stuff. I use this example, and I actually really like this. So maybe this is a good place to spend some time. I think this will be helpful. I like for people to start thinking about their nutrition in three, what I call buckets. Okay. And I think a lot of people who are struggling with nutrition, first of all, they don't feel like they have a lot of time. So they eat a lot of convenient high calorie food. Okay? But I want you to ask yourself, how much of that stuff is actually that good? You said like a lot. Yes, some of it's engineered to be very tasty, but the idea of eating cookies from boxes on supermarket shelves to me is gross. I think that's disgusting. I think that hot dogs are gross. Not everybody feels the same way. I'm Canadian. I think poutine is disgusting, right? I like good pizza. And I'm going to come back to this, but I love Reese peanut butter cups and Reese peanut butter cup Dairy Queen blizzards. Those are special treats for me. This is important. But the overwhelming majority of what we eat out of convenience, out of a hurry, out of not being prepared or planning ahead is actually really mediocre. And how often do we feel like, wow, I just wasted calories on that. I wasted money on that. That wasn't very good, right? So let's put that in a little bit of a box because we eat too much of that. And then I want you to think about, all right, what are the healthy, nourishing, whole food, home cooked, home prepared meals that we actually really love? For example, I would rather bake a salmon, boil some brown rice, have a spinach salad with some grape tomatoes in there, a bit of red onion, whatever, you know, raspberry vinaigrette. I would rather have that meal than I would like a McDonald's, Big Mac meal. 100% I would. And every once in a while, a Big Mac actually is a nice little treat. But if I could, right in front of me, Star Trek replicator, you know, easy, no effort, I would take the salmon and rice or this lean ground turkey pasta that I make or, you know, a nice chicken stir fry 99 times out of 100 over the Big Mac meal. That's me, okay? And I actually think that's most people. And we all have the barriers around time, pre-planning, preparation. We have to actually come to a decision and go, all right, I'm going to actually prepare ahead, plan ahead a little bit. Cooking is not that daunting, okay? You prepare meals in batches, it actually solves most of this problem. And, you know, for all the narrative about I don't have enough time, it's the classic, look at how much time you're spending on your phone, you know, how much are you binging Netflix, et cetera. That's most people, not all. Yes, there are going to be some people, no, my life, yes, I get it, right? For most of you guys, it's bullshit. For most of you guys, you have to actually have that hard conversation with yourself and go, no, you just feel tired because you eat like crap all the time. You're not active. Therefore, you don't have the energy to turn around and cook the meal. And therefore, you have to go and eat the convenient, you know, crap along the way. So, A, bucket one, let's just eat more of that nourishing, good stuff that we fucking like. We really, really enjoy it. And remember that. Bucket two, the mediocre crap that we overconsume, right? Let's just consume a lot less of that. That stuff's not worth it. It sucks. And then let's go back over to my Dairy Queen Blizzard. That Blizzard to me is a treat. I have one a week usually. I look forward to it. It's after a leg day. I train on Saturday. I will literally sit in my Jeep and I will just savor it, eat it slowly. I'm not doing anything else. And it is a really rewarding experience. And that's key because if I think about that, none of this other convenient shit compares to how good that Blizzard is. And I can eat all my bucket one meals and be happy and feel great and have amazing energy because I feel good because I do this. And then I can turn around and I can have that Blizzard when I look forward to it, not on impulse because I planned it, without any guilt, without any shame. How many times do people eat too much of bucket two? And then the stuff that they really love, because bucket two is not fulfilling, right? We feel like we got ripped off. Well, we still want the bucket three things, whatever your like treasured thing is. And it can't be two glasses of wine a night. It can't be pizza every night. Like we have to have adult boundaries around it. But when you actually set a boundary around it and you look forward to it, it makes it special. And maybe it's a sushi dinner with your wife or girlfriend or maybe it's a glass of scotch. I enjoy a really good glass of scotch, right? But it's not getting bombed on scotch. That actually feels terrible the next day. You don't want to do that stuff. But if you set a boundary around what really matters, if you just really try to plan ahead so you don't have to eat all the convenient high-calorie crap, you can remodel your nutrition with this framework right here. Just takes a little bit of planning ahead and realizing this stuff you've been eating, it's not very good. It sucks. And you feel shitty, physically shitty for eating it, and you feel emotionally shitty for wasting the calories and the money on it. It sucks. And it robs you of the enjoyment of eating the things you love because you feel guilty about it. You feel shame. We can change all that.
100%. I think the statistic now that we're at is the average American eats 60 to 70% of their diet coming from ultra processed foods.
That's right? A problem.
What a staggering statistic. And I think there's, you know, you see that's why you see the paleos, you know, you see all these movements that are like eat 100% whole foods. And I think to your point, you don't have to go there. we just need to flip that number, right? Eat 60 to 70% more whole natural foods and then eat your favorite stuff on the side. But I think to your point, we almost now treat food as it's something that's comforting, right? It's a moment that we use this when we're vulnerable or stressed. And a lot of times you regret it after because you didn't even enjoy it that much, or you wasted money or whatever it is, versus, you know, like there's to your exact point, I will be at work and I'll, you know, someone will bring in a box of cookies or something. And I sit there and I stare at them and I kind of get that feeling of like, you know, should I have a little bite? And then all I think about in my head is like, I'm literally going to feel like shit in 30 minutes if I have half that cookie, right? It's not worth it. On the flip side, tonight we're going out to dinner. It's a nice place. And I was looking at the menu. They got this lamb ragu that looks unbelievable. And I am going to savor the shit out of that. You know, it's not the best thing for me. I don't really care, but I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to move on. It's worth it.
I mean, at the end of the day, if meals like that fit within your calorie needs and you're otherwise very active, you're metabolically healthy, there's absolutely nothing wrong with having this whole idea of like clean food versus, you know, good food versus bad food. It's funny. Like there's a middle ground. It's both nonsense, but there's also something to it. And I think the people who really push the message hard of, oh, there's no such thing as bad food. I mean, like, yes, I get what you're saying. We want to remove the stigma and let people like my Dairy Queen Blizzard, right? It's not that that's inherently bad. Although if that's what I ate twice a day all week, and then, you know, the Big Mac meal was my regular meals, guess what? That adds up. That's bad food in that context, right? There's no doubt about that, right? Because I'm over-consuming calories. It makes it too easy to over-consume calories. But does that fit in with an otherwise really well-planned, well-thought-out, eating a nourishing week of food? It fits fine. There's zero issue with it whatsoever. And quite frankly, depending on how much fuel you need and how active you are, you actually may need to have higher sources of calories in more refined things. If you're an endurance athlete, guess what? You're going to be consuming a fairly substantial amount of refined sugars just to be able to power marathons in your training, right? It's all contextual. The problem is the most sedentary, inactive, and metabolically unhealthy people are the ones on average eating the most highly processed crap. And that is bad for them. And it's not an easy thing to pull that person back to rewrite their life. They will have to choose, hey, I don't want to feel this way anymore. I do not want to feel like shit anymore. I'm going to start walking. Okay. And you start walking, you notice, hey, I'm feeling a little bit better. You know, I'm not feeling ready to start in a gym yet. Okay, cool. Maybe for that person, it's getting back to the gym and doing a 35 minute long full body strength training workout where you're doing some goblet squats, you know, maybe some dumbbell bench pressing. Maybe it's like a cable row on a machine. Maybe you sit in a leg press, or you push the sled on the turf a couple times, you walk out the door, you've done great. You don't crush yourself on day one, and you gradually add in more load, more intensity as you develop these skills. And if you go 2 to 3 times a week from being totally sedentary, you are absolutely crushing it. And if you're doing that physical activity, I promise you, you will feel motivated to make better choices with your nutrition so it doesn't feel overwhelming or daunting. Start with one thing, start small. Whether it's starting on the nutrition side, whether it's just getting outside and walking more, getting off the couch, or maybe it is stepping into the gym with just some basic full body workouts. If anybody listening is literally struggling with how to work out, I have free programs I can send you. Like, just shoot me a message on Instagram. I will dig out something. I will send it to you. You've got a starting place. There'll be videos with it. I promise. Okay.
That's it. You know, and it goes back to the post that we talked about burning more calories and building muscle. Like, I think the impact of the actual muscle itself, improving your metabolism and increasing it, is the relatively smaller piece of the puzzle. The reality is it's a catalyst for so much more, right? It is a behavior lifestyle change. And if you are consistently building muscle and getting stronger, you got to be doing a lot of things in your life right for that to happen consistently, right? It is, you're going to improve your diet. You're going to improve your sleep. You're going to have to reduce stress, all these things. But I think a lot of people are waiting for the motivation to come, right? To be able to do all these things. And the reality is the action drives motivation. You have to start somewhere, and then everything else snowballs with it over time.
That's correct. That's a good place to leave off. I appreciate you having me on. Amazing. Apologize for not having time.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, Andrew. And as always, it's just a breath of fresh air to see how simple you keep it. And I think you help a ton of people out there. So keep it going.
That's the goal. I genuinely want to see more people feel better, change their lives. So if anybody has any questions, like I said, shoot me a message. I respond to everything. Thank you so much, Herman. I appreciate it. And for everybody listening, guys, do a little kindness here too. He goes through the trouble to host this podcast. We don't make money from our podcast. We don't. So the way that you actually help is if you've got some friend in your world and that this episode, the stuff we talked about, would probably really help them. Maybe that's a person's talking about change but is struggling. Give them this specific episode. Share this with them and encourage them to subscribe to what Herman's doing here. And you might actually change that person's life. I sort of sound like Alex Hormozi here because he says similar things with his podcast. If anybody listens, business guru. But it's all true. So thank you for having me on, brother. I appreciate it.
Amazing. Thanks, everybody.